Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything on that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is a .com and they have it all, from music to sports to self-help, but they even have talk. So why don't you sit back in your favorite chair, put your feet up, tune into LATalkRadio.com, and give us a listen. Guaranteed to be fun for you, and we're coming at you right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, all right, we're going to go without the music. Anyway, you are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I am your host for this wonderful 50 minutes of entertainment and fun stuff coming at you directly from my little home studio in Star, Idaho, and on the phone with my very favorite co-host, my very first co-host, and that delectable, delightful little young lady, Bobby Jean Bell, in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, Jim, we're social distancing across the miles.
I know. And, you know, wow, it's just like, uh-oh.
Yeah, we wouldn't have been able to be in the studio if we were still in L.A. So we're ahead of the curve, you see.
We're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, we're setting the new standard for, you know, work at home, podcast at home.
You have your little Blue Yeti there and your headphones, your headset, and I have my mixing board and my studio mics, and I'm sitting here in my little office, and I'm just ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, and we can just continue with regardless of what goes on out there. We're still live in here and doing what we love to do best, reading, writing, and talking about it.
That's right. And just a reminder that The Writer's Block, as little of a show as we are, goes out to a very large audience live every Thursday night. And you can also catch the podcasts about 5 minutes after the show is over with. The podcasts show up. And of course, they're there for your listening pleasure, if that's what you actually get out of it, or entertainment or educational pleasure. So there you have it. So let's just get right into it, because I'm eager to get to this guy. He is he's a horror slash mystery slash body slasher slash PI slash crime. I think I covered them all.
And blogger.
And the guy is like, he's just like, well, let's let him tell you. Would you please welcome to The Writer's Block, Mr. MJ Preston.
Well, hey, thank you for having me, Jim and Bobby Jean. I appreciate it.
Oh, MJ, it's an absolute pleasure for us. We never get somebody with all of those little words after their name. So.
Especially slash after each one.
I didn't realize all those words were after my name, but
I guess
when you break down what I write about, I guess you're right there.
I cover a lot of stuff. I don't even know what genre. I mean, you say mystery horror genre. I mean, we can add like probably five more adjectives or, you know, verbs. It's just like, wow, it's not just horror. It's not just mystery, you know. Actually, a slasher book. That's what it should be, huh, Bobby Jean?
Well,
I don't know. I was just going to say we're talking about
really the book that you and I both read, Highwayman, Book One. But he's really written a variety of things. So do you want to, MJ, just tell us a little bit about the genres that you do enjoy writing about?
Why don't you tell our listeners about the Highwayman first, and then go into some of your other books.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do that. So the Highwayman book, the first Highwayman book is the kickoff to a series I'm going to write. And I've written two books, but the first book is the first half of a longer tale, which is, this story envelops two books. So this first half is really about the rise of a serial killer from his early beginnings when he's a young man and he makes his first fledgling kill. And then he just gets bigger and bigger. And the reason he gets bigger is because he wants to be the most notorious serial killer alive. That's what he's decided. And he's got a little bit of an advantage on his side because his parents died in a fire, and it had nothing to do with him, but he inherited like $8 million. So he doesn't have to worry about employment. He's got property, and he basically starts flying all over the country and sighting in places that he's going to kill and leave bodies. And he wants to get on the FBI's most wanted list. That's his end game. Well, he doesn't want to get caught though, but he wants to be notorious.
Right. Mm-hmm. He wants to be the very best in the world.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. He definitely wants to be remembered. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. His name is Lance Bellinger, and he's a very narcissistic, creepy individual. When I wrote this, we've seen kind of a trend in the last while, even when Thomas Harris wrote Silence of the Lambs, that some of the characters actually become anti-heroes. I mean, you think of Hannibal Lecter, for instance, would be a good mm-hmm. example. Is he eats people, but he's so damn charming. We all kind of like him. You know, he's got a wit and he's very scary. You know, there's that scary edge to him. And then, you know, we moved on to something like Dexter, and where he only kills bad people. And so you're empathizing with this guy. But when I wrote this book, I did an awful lot of research. And as a result of that, I wanted to make sure that nobody liked Lance Bellinger at all. Mm-hmm. He's a horrible, horrible human being. So
okay, we're going to go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
we'll go with that.
And he has a protege, and I think it was kind of interesting your introduction of he sort of becomes a mentor. He goes looking for one. And so, you know, all good stories, we seem to sort of have a hero, and he needs a guide, you know, to help him, an expert to help him sort of show the way. And not that Lance is not our hero, but there's a relationship between the two of them that's a bit like that. You want to talk about how you chose to introduce Norris?
Norris the necrophile.
Yeah.
and another funny thing about Norris is I liked him. In the book, I liked him not for what he does, but because he's a pitiful creature. Mm-hmm. And he really is. He's a follower, and he's got issues of his own. He's really Norman Bates with a club foot. You know, he was an overbearing mother, and Lance takes him in. But Lance has a big project in mind that, you know, he wants to draw serial. And I'm not giving anything away, because if you read the back of the book, it says it on the back of the book. He wants to draw serial killers in and start almost a serial killer club. Mm-hmm. In the sense that he doesn't want to start a club so much, but he wants to up his kills. And he holds people like Vlad Tepes, the Impaler. He holds them in high regard as just these, you know, gods, for doing this, because they've left their mark on society. And it's a black, dark, ugly mark. So he takes Norris in, and Norris is a pretty childlike individual, but you're right. He's mentored by Lance, and there is a relationship that builds between the two of them. And I think for all of Lance's horrificness, I think he does have an affection for Norris in a way, almost like a little brother, or, mm-hmm. you know, too young to be his son, but mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But Norris was a fun character, right? And, he came out of a lot of the research that I read about serial killers, because I did an awful, awful lot of research. And, you know, but he was still, I still found him a sympathetic character. And so does that cover, like, anything else you think I should add? Or?
Oh, anything you want to add.
Yeah. This is your show.
Well, I think one of the things that I really enjoyed writing about Norris and Lance is where Norris starts to become annoying to Lance, you know, mm-hmm. how he snores and all these things that you find out about a person. And the kind of, I guess the joke of it is you meet a person online and, you know, hey, they're whatever that they, you attract to them. And then when he actually is, you know, working with us, he realizes what a liability that Norris really is, because he's unpredictable and he doesn't listen all the time and stuff. So they work very well off of each other. And I really did enjoy writing him for sure.
Well, yeah, but you know, that's not the only writing you've done. I mean, you just, there's your website lists quite a few.
Yeah.
And you flip back and forth between genres, which is kind of cool. And kind of explain that a little bit. And remembering, that, of course, that this show is geared towards new writers, and they would love to hear about how you do stuff.
Well, I don't think that you'll ever take the horror out of me. That's the way I look at it, on the way I write. I always tell myself someday I'm going to write a memoir, right? So someday. But when you go back to the books themselves, I believe there is a horrific element, but I think the difference between the Highwayman series and my other two books, the first one was a native mysticism, a skinwalker, and there was lots of gore and everything like that in it. And then the second book was a Katy event. And that was, ice road truckers up in the north, and they run into an all out alien invasion. I like playing in areas like that because I'm comfortable. And when I stepped into this, it was a lot more research, but it's fun to kind of get out of that too. And I said to somebody in another interview at one time, they said, you know, you always get that asked that one question, what's coming up? And the person said to me, what's coming up? And I said, well, probably another Highwayman book, but I got this really cool juicy horror novel I want to write. So it's kind of fun to move out of one zone into another, for me at least. And I mean, these two are actually comfort zones. And I think the other part of it is for the writers is it challenges you as a writer. You know, with everything we write, we get a little bit better. We get a little bit better.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt.
Yeah. When you move right out of your comfort zone and you're forced to focus, I think, more on what you're writing and going back and, you know, making sure you got all your ducks in a row. And as an example, these two books that I just released in the Highwayman series, they are chronological, the dates, everything. Mm-hmm, and I tell the one thing that I wish that I had done was what is the name of the program? I've got it on my computer. Scribus. You know what I'm talking about? The writing program.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I use Microsoft Word, so I had to go back and you know, do a bunch of double-checking on the dates, and that was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you have a lot the chapters are by date.
Right.
By date and by highway, and I've been to all of those places.
Yes, and by
you
highway.
You find a body there, I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, the character spends quite a while. Well, Syracuse, I lived outside Syracuse for a while. It's always fun when you as a reader read something where you go, oh, I've been to Montana, or, you know, oh, I've been to that place in Pennsylvania. So having him kind of jet around the country was sort of fun as a reader, imagining him in these different locations.
Right. But, you know, and also there are some multo desolate highways in this country that you can go miles and miles and miles and not see another car.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that was my gig for a lot of years. I still have a day job, and I work in safety and training now. But I mean, I drove a truck for a lot of years, and so when I was down in the United States, I crisscrossed all those highways, and I know exactly what you mean, like where you can get on a highway, like in Texas, for instance.
Right.
And
oh my gosh,
goes and goes.
And there's
but it gives you a lot of time to think too when you're doing that kind of job.
Right. So, it's like riding a horse across Death Valley. I mean, there's nothing there but dead shit and grass, you know?
That's right. Yeah.
And rocks. Yeah, I got that totally. So I'm going to ask you, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think the other, just to tie up what I was talking about before, is I think the other part of it that was different in the writing of these books, like, or moving from one to another, was just the general ideas. They flow in a whole different fashion. And for instance, when I'm doing a horror novel, you know, I'm just all in, let's go, right? But with the Highwayman series, I moved at a much slower pace to, mm-hmm. to keep all those ducks in a row. And then, of course, you have to go over and over and over. But anyways, I'm sorry for interrupting you. Go on with your
point. No, that's okay. That's okay. Did you pick the genre, or did the genre pick you?
Well, I'd have to say horror picked me a long time ago. I mean, I loved all the creature features, Frankenstein, all that stuff. I mean, I was one of the suckers that, you know, sent away for the back of the comics there for the, you know, the 6 foot tall Frankenstein, thought I was getting
a
mannequin, and I got a poster. Yeah, but I was like 10. The poster was so cool. But yeah, no, that's, I think it picked me, definitely. I've always liked that genre, just because it's a really cool place that you can do all sorts of things that you can't do in the real world.
Right.
You know, you're not saddled by all these things, and you could put people into the most precarious position.
Right.
So it's, you know, so yeah, I think it picked me.
Oh, good. And to be fair, you were at one time an ice road trucker, were you not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. I was on the ice roads from 2012 to 2016.
I don't know how you did
and,
it.
Oh, it was awesome. You know, there's a road that runs up, and in Acadia event, that's what inspired me to write Acadia event. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, it's almost autobiographical, like from the character's point of view, that's me. Uh-huh. But there's a road that runs up there, and it's, you know, roughly 40 mile road, and it was called the Ingram Trail. And there are places where you're almost bumping mirrors with an opposing truck and you're hauling fuel.
Oh,
and so,
oh.
So what happened with me is I was going to get out of trucking altogether, and I, you know, pretty much had my, and a friend of mine invited me out. He said, you know, buddy, you're going to quit trucking. You got to do the ice road. Then you can say you did it. And I said, okay. So I came out. So we went up this Ingram Trail, and I have Super Bees loaded with fuel, which is two tankers behind you. Mm-hmm. And so you're going up these icy grades, and then you're going down the other side, and it's icy going down. And also the tankers are pushing you. So anyways, I did 21 trips up there, and I think it took me by the 13th trip before I wasn't scared to death. In fact, mm-hmm. every time I got to the top of that Ingram Trail, I ate a sandwich, just a big ham salad sandwich. I gained like 15 pounds on the ice. So, but yeah, no, that was probably the most inspiring thing I've ever did in a trucking career was go up there. I got to see the northern lights and the animals, and you're just driving on a sea of ice, and it is really actually very cool.
Wow.
From a writer's perspective, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Bobby. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to ask, while Highwayman is still also in our conversation, I wondered, and you mentioned that you had to go a little slower when you were writing Highwayman, and I wonder, I kept thinking to myself, am I reading horror or am I reading crime? And kind of where is the line? Maybe you can talk a little bit about the line, if there is one, between horror fiction and crime fiction, because this could fall into crime.
Yes, I think it does, actually. The thing is, Wobbly Press is touting me as their horror author. They didn't have a horror section, and they just opened it up with me, and now we've got another horror author in there as well. So I don't think of the Highwayman series so much as a horror, but maybe with horrific elements
horrific elements. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would agree with you that it's more of a police procedural chase down type thing. Mm-hmm. And, but I think I'm a huge fan of John Sanford, and I know you had him on the show. And
I'm on
a show that John Sanford was on. So
I have to tell you too, that
I can die now.
We absolutely loved having him on the show.
Oh, he was so much fun.
Oh yeah. I could,
wonderful,
yeah, he's a real gentleman, you know, but But anyways, I'm a huge fan of John Sanford, as I know you are too, Jim.
Right.
And I've read, you know, I can't say that I've read every book. I'm behind a couple of the Prey books, but you know, I think that Highwayman has a little bit more of that feel, but I think I'm a lot darker in like I've gone to an even darker place. I think than when Sanford was going.
You are right. There is somewhat of a Sanford Prey feel to it, but for your edification, it is much darker. Much darker than a Sanford book.
And yet, you do have a little humor now and again. I think Lance at one moment had a kind of a private thought about maybe he should write a book, Dismemberment for Dummies. And there were a few other times when I was like, oh, I can chuckle right there.
Yeah, you've still got to keep your sense of humor somewhat. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, you got to throw it in there someplace. Let me ask you, MJ, are you a pantser or do you outline?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't outline at all. I guess definitely a pantser. I never even knew the term until recently, but I have a lot of writer friends. Some of them outline it, and hey, whatever works for you. But for me, it's just put the fingers on the keyboard and go and see where it
and
takes
go.
Me.
Tell your story.
Yeah.
That's a surprise to me, because for this book with the dates and the, I would have thought, because as I was taking notes as I was reading it, I felt like, you know, this is like an outline. I'm following an outline. So, but
yeah,
maybe
that's,
was this book a little different that way than the other books?
Or well, the only thing about that is that when you're going to do something chronologically, you've got to go back and get your ducks in a row, because to my credit, I have a research assistant out of Florida, so that makes me really important. But she's fantastic, and so she helped me keep my ducks in a row too. She was beta reading at the same time, and then she come back. And you know what's great about her is that. Okay, for instance, if I wanted to have a kill site somewhere, she would send me a list. And I said, well, because I'd lose track of how many people were murdered by this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And she'd send me, and she would send it, and it would say Patty's kill list. And she would keep, so it was, this is the first project where I had to have somebody give me a hand on it. And she was just, I can't say enough. And I mean, even the editor that I dealt with at Blue and all that, just fantastic. That helped a lot. But I can't be one of those guys that sits down and puts it up on a tack board and say, okay, here's my characters. Okay, here's my plot. No, and for any writers out there, I used to frequent forums and stuff like that and talk to other writers. And sometimes I'll go back and, mentor a little bit or just chit chat or learn something.
Right.
And, one thing I see a lot of young writers is they're agonizing over that first paragraph, that first page, that first chapter. And that's the worst thing you can do. My mentor told me, and he was a historical writer. I sent him a chapter and I'll keep it G rated, but basically, he sent it back and he said, what took you so long? I said, well, man, I was polishing. I was so scared you were going to say it was crap, right? And he said, just write the blanking thing. Right. And that's the best advice that I ever got as a writer, because the way I write is I go from point A to point B. I don't get all hung up. I do a quick check because I know I'm going to be going back about 15 or 20 bloody times again. Mm-hmm. So get the story out and then go back and polish and chop and cut and take away where you were long-winded or whatnot. So,
right.
Anyway, I think that a lot of writers would benefit from that, because I hear a lot of them saying that, here's my first page or here's my first paragraph.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And on this show, we can't say this enough, and I think we say it probably every show, is that the base to writing is tell your story. Then
that's right.
Get an editor. But tell your story. Write your story down. It doesn't have to be great. No story is great when it comes out of the fingers. But what it does do is it gives an editor a chance to have some work. And it gives you a chance to go back and clean up your stuff. But get it on paper. Get it down first.
That's my formula anyways.
Mine too, actually. I'm with you all the way. And right now we have to take a real quick break. And one of our big sponsors on the Writer's Block, of course, is the Out West. internet store for Western apparel and stuff, including CDs and Western wear, and of course, Western novels. And let's hear a little bit about them, Ronan.
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. This man and his wife loved serving others through the retail trade. One day, the man said to his wife, "I have learned of recent natural disasters impacting those we love and communities we serve. How can we help?" And his wife said, "I am so glad you're thinking about this. We have a friend who lost his home to the tornado in Tennessee, and we have rancher friends in Oregon facing extreme hardships due to recent floodwaters." And they said to each other, "There must be a way we can help." And a voice said, "Create the Hero Collection at OutWestShop.com and donate a portion of its sales every month to a charitable cause." And the husband said, "We can do that." And the wife said, "It's as good as done." And the Hero Collection was created. Find it at OutWestShop.com. Make a purchase and be a hero to those in need. And the man, his wife, and their hero customers live happily ever after, because it's always a great day out west.
You don't know who that was on that ad? Well, just listen to this voice that's giggling in the background right now. That, of course, is Bobby Jean Bell. Aww. And she and her husband Jim own Out West, and actually they've been friends of mine personally since 2010. Yeah, when I first went on the Buckaroo Bookshop at the Santa Clarita.
Yeah, well, I think we met over the phone, and then we had you on Around the Barn, and then 2010 we had you at the bookshop. Yep.
Right. And it's been, and here we are. It's now 2020, Bobby Jean has been a co-host for 5 years.
Yeah, and loving every minute of it.
And we're just having a ball. Yeah. And I want to call and talk to you. I don't know if it's going to work tonight because of all the stuff going on with this virus. But if you want to call and talk to MJ tonight, the number you can call is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is, I hope, 818-602-4929. And Ronan will get you patched in. If he can't, we'll always say he should have. And we're sorry. We're going to apologize beforehand, and just in case you can't make it through. And it is now, of course, 7:26. We are back with our MJ Preston and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And we're talking about his shtick on writing and how he, well, let's get into it. How do you develop your story, MJ? I mean, you know, horror stories are not always easy, or even mysteries are not always easy to put together, especially when you're not using an outline. How do you do it?
Well, usually nowadays that I'm a big time writer, that's a joke, I float in my hot tub. That's the truth. I'll go put a bit of music on, just kind of float in the hot tub, and I do like a morning meditation before I write. Back in the day,
my mind would be wandering. I think you guys can tell me what you think, but I think a lot of writers are big time daydreamers. And sometimes, at least when I was a kid, I got a lot of crap for it, you know, for looking out the window. And they think I'd be looking out the window thinking about soccer, and I'm thinking about some monster or something like that.
Drumming your fingers on your desk. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's really it. You know what? It's usually solitary moments. The other day, I came up like with an epiphany for the new book that I'm working on, but you know, where I was going to take it and all that. And it really comes from those kind of solitary moments, I guess. And for me, it's like a meditation. Now I'll go out and just kind of close my mind. I'll have some music playing in my earbuds, and you know, hot water doesn't hurt. And it just kind of comes to me. And once I get out of there, and I'm only in there for like 20 minutes, mm-hmm. I'm ready to go. I go downstairs and I go to work.
And you go to work. So you're able to capture in your memory what, you know, I mean, you're not talking into your phone there on the side, so you don't miss an idea. No. You're able to just go and capture it.
Yeah. I like to think that, and I'm not,
I don't have a photographic memory or anything like that. I would have stunk at that. But I like to think that I've got a filing cabinet in the back of my head. So when I see that crazy guy down at Walmart, you know, wearing the pink spandex and the strange shirt, and not to pick on Walmart, but I'm going to, he goes into my filing cabinet because I just, I'm like a sponge. I absorb stuff, everything I see. And, you know, I might be looking at my wife and I'm analyzing something she's doing. And it may not be connected. She may not become a character. She won't, but something she's doing may become part of another character. So that's really what my process is. The horror thing is kind of cool because, like I said, I grew up on this stuff. I have a great love for the 70s horror, which is the most schlocky, but it was interesting and different. And I decided when I wrote my first book, Equinox, that took me 20 years to write. I shelved it for 12 years. And by the time it got to publication, it was 20 years. But that book was, there was a wave of zombie and vampire and werewolf movies just flowing out and books and everything. And we were being overloaded. And I said, I just want to write a story with a different monster in it. So I picked a skinwalker, which came from the Choctaw tribe up in the north. I was also inspired by, you know, I read John Ferris's The Fury. So I wanted to have kind of a chase thing going in it too. Like he's chasing the skinwalker across the Americas and it's killing. And that just worked. And that's a book I wrote, you know, I didn't make $1 million on it, but it got so much love when it went out there, and I was, you know, and that was my first book, and it just kind of flowed from there. I thought maybe I can do this, you know, and I had no idea I was going to write another book after Equinox. And then when I went up on the ice, it was like, boom, you got to write this book. Right at the same time I was starting to write Acadia Event, I actually wrote the first three chapters of four. So I hadn't even written Highwayman yet. And
wow.
So it was a flip if I was going to do four as a standalone novel or if I was going to do Acadia Event. And my mentor, a guy named Jim Steele, he was faster on the draw than my wife, Stormy, who came back and said, you got to write four. But it was too late because I'd already committed to Acadia Event because my mentor told me to write Acadia Event. So anyways, off we went. And it's been a weird, weird journey because then when I wrote for, somebody suggested to me, hey, you should write a novella, you know, something, a prequel to four. And that way, when you're ready to publish a book, you can just give the novella away as, you know, to kind of prop up sales. And so I wrote this novella and it didn't work as a novella. So it ended up becoming a novel and that was Highwayman. So in the first year, it was going to be a novella, but it just didn't work. So, and I'm really, I don't know about you, but I have a hard time staying under the novel length when I write. Short stories, I've written and I've published them, but I struggle with them more because I just want to take off, you know.
Well, you know, haven't you noticed in the last probably 5 years, maybe 10 years, the book length has been shortened down. Used to have books 600, 700 pages. Now we're looking at 500, 450. You know, because it's people's attention that the authors now and the publishing houses are trying to keep, not so much get, you know, the days of War and Peace and Anna Karenina are kind of like gone.
And yeah,
no,
I think so.
Going to write a novel like 1,000 pages anymore.
Well, except maybe Stephen King on a weekend.
Or it becomes a series.
I'm thinking the stand on him.
How did you find Wild Blue? Your publisher is Wild Blue Press, right?
Yes. Yeah.
How did you connect?
That's an interesting story because when I was researching Highwayman, one of the books I read was by a true crime writer named Kevin M. Sullivan, and he wrote The Bundy Murders: A Comprehensive History. So I read this book because I think I got more insight into the serial killer Ted Bundy by reading this book than Ann Rule's book, or like it just is a very, very insightful book. And I sent him an email and I said, hey, listen, just let you know, I'm a writer from Canada. You know, I said, I'm not, you know, as well known as you. And I said, I just actually just sending you an email to tell you that I really enjoyed your book. I drew a lot from it, and it's helped in the research that I'm doing for the book I'm writing, which is a fictional book. Mm-hmm. And he got back to me and said, you got a publisher yet? And I said, no, not yet. I'm thinking about shopping it around once it's done. And he said, well, check out Wild Blue. And so that's what I did. I mean, Kevin didn't, you know, open a back door and let me in. I submitted old school. And they had my stuff for quite a while before, you know, we got the okay. But they came back and they said, okay, we want the Highwayman series, but we want to take your other two books too. Mm-hmm. So they ended up taking, because Equinox and Acadia Event were both independent. And so they've taken them under their wing as well. So, yeah, they're great guys. They do a lot of true crime. I mean, they've got New York Times bestselling authors on their docket. So they, you know, they seem to know what they're doing, and they're helping with the marketing and all sorts of other stuff. And they're really enthusiastic people. So, and the cool thing is, I was never on audiobook, and all of my books are going to audiobook now.
Mm-hmm. I see that.
And that was actually just a big kick for me. Just the, you know, the idea of sitting down and listening to somebody else read your book. That, you know, yes. This is a whole different animal.
Yes. It's really hard.
Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah. but it's really hard when you're trying to, when you're listening to auditions and you know what your character should sound like and they're not doing it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like my business partner, actually a partner in Tuscany Bay Books, Richard Polinelli, and I wrote a Western together called The Last Lonely Trail. And we wanted to get done on audiobook, but every audition we came back, everybody was giving us the Southern accent, what they thought was a Western accent. And we kept saying, no, whatever accent there is written into the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Just read the dialogue.
Right.
You know, that's all you have to do.
And well, I had some interesting ones, too. I had and I'm not going to out anybody, but I had a gentleman who one gentleman read for the Equinox. And the Equinox is, you know, the main character is Aboriginal.
Right.
So and this gentleman was British, and he was a fantastic reader. But we couldn't have a reader who was a British gentleman reading this story. It was like, because right now in Canada, there's still a lot of arguments between the government and all that, and with the Aboriginal community, and they're trying to gain ground. And, you know, having a colonial read my book probably wouldn't have been a good thing anyway. So we had to take a pass on that guy. But yeah, it's funny, like people do get dialects wrong, or they're reading stuff wrong. But I got to give them some credit, because I tried doing that, a little bit of recording myself, and I get all mealy-mouthed. Like, I don't think I could read my own books.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, I actually started doing The Last Lonely Trail only because we couldn't find anybody to do it. So that's just another thing on my plate. Though. Oh, well, thank you, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you've got a really good voice for that.
I'm old and
I'll tell you, I still listen to a lot of audiobooks, not as many as I used to. I'm lucky enough now I can get, you know, into the actual pages. But, you know, it takes a certain voice to grab the reader. And that's almost that I'm almost out if I can't take the person's voice or if I don't feel it's right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But boy, there's some people out there just nailing it, doing a really good job. So.
Yeah, there are a lot of them nailing it, which brings me up to another question for you. Character development. How long does it take you to really develop a character, start to finish, book start to book end, and you know who he is, and he's by the end of the book, he's telling you where he's going to go?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. I would say, I mean, it depends on how fast I'm moving on the writing, but we're talking chapters, you know, before I have an idea. Especially if I'm developing a character, because if as I'm developing a character, really, that's what you're doing for the reader too, right? You're introducing them to this person, so you're being the writer. You're just the first person that's going to get to know them.
Sure.
And it depends on how strong the character is in it. Now, if we're talking the protagonist,
right?
Well, that's a full book deal, you know.
Right.
if we're talking a side character, like I've written a lot of characters that, you know, you develop this love for, that especially, you know, if they're kind of oddball or goofy, at least for me. And those ones, I can explore them in a chapter, but if it's a very strong supporting character, it's a different deal. I think it kind of, for me, it's the whole book. And even then, after you write that first draft, there may be something more needs to go get explored or chopped. Who knows, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got, your character development and also includes, is of course naturally going to include dialogue. And yeah. How important is it to make your dialogue as realistic as possible?
Oh, it's just super, super important. And in every aspect of, like, you're trying to tell people that these are real people that you're telling right. them about. So, you've got to try and make it as natural as possible. And, mm-hmm. and for me, it's like, when I do it, it's almost just like a movie on rolling in front of me anyways, you mm-hmm. know, and then you'll write something, you'll maybe go back and say, okay, well, that didn't go off quite right. It's, especially the humorous stuff. If you can kick something in there where, you know, throw a laugh once in a while, but dialogue is so damn important. It's you're not going to sell your character without it.
Right. Right. You know, there's another question I wanted to ask you. But first of all, I'm going to ask you the question that we always ask everybody on the Writer's Block. The name of the show, of course, is The Writer's Block. And have you ever had Writer's Block? And if you have, how did you get out of it? You have 2 minutes to answer this question.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
That's so one thing I never said.
Jeopardy song now?
That's it.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, I think everybody gets into a funk. I don't look at it as writer's block. I call it writer's depression, where you're kind of like, oh God, I'm just disgusting. I don't know why am I doing this? You know, like
right.
you get at least, yeah. Now look at me, I'm channeling myself. But I think, how I get out of it is I just walk away for a while and I'll pick up something else to read. And once I start reading it, if it's interesting, and especially if it's, you know, a book, you know, like a novel or something like that, that kind of pulls me out of the funk a bit. The writing, or reading what somebody else has written, and it gets the juices flowing again.
Uh-huh.
And usually that's my best way out of it. I'm going to write until the gray matter says no more. And, you know, whether I'm, you know, Stephen King successful, and that's just a joke, or not, because this is what I was picked to do. Right. Somebody was picked to, you know, play a violin. Somebody was picked to do whatever. This is what you're supposed to do. You're a storyteller. One of the oldest profession around, except right. for one.
Well, it's your legacy.
It is. And that's a cool way to say it, because you get to leave that behind and it doesn't right. go away.
It never goes away.
That's right.
So my daughter told me today when I said, you know, I'm not going to die this week. And she goes, oh, good. I didn't want to collect my inheritance too soon. And I said, oh, yeah. And I laughed at her. I said, yeah, you're going to get 4 more books. Biggie, wow. So, I wanted to ask you about, because before we go to another break, you're not only a writer, but you're also a photographer. And
well,
I don't know if you wanted us
amateur,
to bring that up.
I am an amateur photographer.
You have a website. Well, actually, it's on Flickr. But Flickr, you have phenomenal photographs. And I want to kind of get into that a little bit when we come back from the break. But right now, we're going to take a break. But we're also going to listen to something about someone that you and I both know, MJ. And that would be Mickey Mickelson at Creative Edge Publicity. How about it, Ronan?
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you can find them at www.creative-edge.services. Winter companions, the old
men. And that's for Creative Edge Publicity and Mickey Mickelson Publicist. And MJ, I understand that you are also a Mickey Mickelson client.
I am, yeah. No, yeah, Mickey's great.
Isn't he the best?
Yeah, I can't say enough good things about him. He's fantastic.
Me either. He's really, really great. And he does partially sponsor the show, which we appreciate. And so we run his ads every week, and we love Mickey. In fact, we've got him booked back on the show. He's already been on once. I've got him booked again this year to come in and talk about publicity and writers and stuff, and which should be a great show because the last one was really good. You have a picture on your Flickr page that is a derelict ship. I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about.
A derelict ship.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's actually not a derelict.
Not.
I guess you. I don't. Well, that is the Merv Hardy. And when we used to drive up to Yellowknife to get, because you had to cross the Mackenzie River, and when you're going up there in January, the river's not frozen enough that you can take a large truck across it.
Right.
So the mode of transport to get across was the Merv Hardy. And there was a bridge being built beside it, which finally did go in. And then the Merv Hardy was decommissioned, but it was moved up river. I think it may be back in action, but I'm not positive.
Oh,
but yeah, it's a cool thing. I rode on that thing many time.
Because my wife took a picture of a derelict up at Icy Strait Point in Alaska. And it actually got her a blue ribbon at the Ventura County Fair in California.
Wow.
It's a very cool. It's a very cool boat, not a ship, but it's a boat. It's called the Intrepid. And there it is, sitting rotting on the beach, which is kind of interesting. But you have some really great pictures of your ice road trucker days and of pieces that are places that are falling down, and you have some live livestock, animals and stuff. I mean, if you are interested in really some really nice photography, go to flickr.com/MJPreston-albums. And you'll be able to see some pretty good pictures. And I don't know if MJ is going to charge you to download them, but they are really great. So
no,
there you
can download them.
See, no, I just gave you a nice plug. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the photography thing I took up in 2012. And my wife asked me, what do you want for Christmas? And I said, you know what, I'd really like a nice camera. And so they went out and got me a little, you know, an entry-level Canon Rebel T3. Uh-huh.
Sure.
And that thing went everywhere with me. Any opportunity. We were caught in a Category 3 snow, or sorry, not a Category 3, but we were caught in a heavy, heavy whiteout snowstorm on a portage, like 50 trucks stranded on the ice. And everybody's hunkering down in their trucks for the storm because they're going to have to come and rescue us with plows to get us out the next day.
Uh-huh.
And guys are watching TV because you don't get a lot of sleep doing this, or they're
right.
Sleeping, and I'm outside skulking around with my camera at night taking shots because that's, I mean, it was such a cool place, the sky lit up at night, and I also think the photography feeds into my writing as well. You go see, you know, some of the, like you said, derelict buildings or stuff like that, and that's inspiring.
It is.
It's a nice outlet.
And some pictures really can, I've used some public domain pictures for some of the covers of my books, only because they're exactly what I wanted, and I'm cheap, so they're free,
yeah.
I mean, they're exactly what I wanted to say, and there they were, so, but they work out well, but go ahead.
That's the beautiful thing about the internet now, though.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's the darker side and whatever, but the the beautiful thing. I mean, the information age. I mean, we can touch each other all over the world without actually touching each other, by the way. So, So, I mean, it's cool that you do that. And you know what? I think it's really cool that a lot of artists are putting their stuff out there. And like I say, I've got my photographs. I don't, you know, I mean, if somebody wants to put it on an ad or something like that, or somebody wanted it for some reason because it fit to something, they could contact me. And sure. Absolutely. If it's, you know, sure. It's a cool thing. Yeah.
Sure.
That's what it's for. It's art.
Well, you know what? We're out of time.
Oh, wow.
It's you know, it just roared by. And, you know, as always, we love having guests that are on that are interesting and colorful and fun to talk to. And you certainly did fit that bill. So we appreciate the time you spent with us tonight, MJ.
Well, thanks to you too, Jim and Bobby Jean. I mean, you guys were great. I had a lot of fun.
You're very welcome. And, you know, you're welcome to come back whenever you get some stuff published again. Just give Jerry another holler and she'll get you booked and we'll go through the whole thing again. But we have really enjoyed having you. Well, I'm speaking for me. I don't know, Bobby Jean, were you okay?
Oh, yeah.
Has she left the room?
Oh, no, I've just been listening, you know.
I hesitate to speak for Bobby, but I know she enjoyed the time with you as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm right here. Yeah.
So it's been a hoot. And why don't you give our audience your information where you can contact you, if you wouldn't mind, please.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. They can get me at mjpreston.net or they can find me on Facebook. I got a public page and, you know, you can get me there. Or you can check out the Wild Blue Press website. I'm on there as well. Or go to Amazon to my Amazon page, MJ Preston, and you can check me out there. And
they can find you on Creative Edge. There you go. There you go.
And at Creative Edge as well. Yeah.
There you go. So, and thank you, MJ, so much for joining us and allowing us to take up an hour of your evening. It's not always easy, and we get that, but we appreciate the time we spend with you. So enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too.
Go have that beer that you've been hiding under your desk.
Oh, I will do that. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, my friend. Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, MJ Preston. Nice guy.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when we're talking before show, it's like, God, is this going to be okay? Are we going to do all right? And it turned out to be just a great show. So
absolutely. He gave us all kinds of tips that we haven't heard before. Get in the hot tub, you know, and meditate with a little music before you go to writing. I think that's new.
Of course, we should have asked him if he was naked, but didn't. No.
Well, we could leave some things to the imagination.
Well, I know. It's kind of like, you know, head, two arms, two legs, and how do they come up with six pieces?
Yeah, well, we weren't going to ask that question. That we'll leave that up to the imagination as well.
So next week, you won't be with us.
I won't.
Russ is going to be back next week. He's back from France.
Oh, okay.
You have a week off next week.
So we just switched weeks. Okay.
Yeah, we just switched weeks. And Bobby Nash will be with us next week. He's he writes a couple genres, and I'm interested to talk to him. He's like thriller, suspense, crime, action, adventure, horror, sci-fi, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, a bunch. So looking forward to giving him a little chat. And other than that, good luck with everybody. Good luck with this coronavirus that's killing people. So please take it easy. Stay in if you can. And that's for Bobby Jean and for Russ and myself and LA Talk Radio. And, of course, the Writer's Block. We're out of here.